Hello, everyone, and welcome back. This is Marcus from Gen Con TV, and we are excited to bring you another classic episode of Fireside with Peter Adkisson, where the founder of Wizards of the Coast himself takes us on a trip through the untold history of Magic the Gathering with special guests from the game's illustrious past. In today's classic episode, Peter and co-host Beverly Marshall Sailing are joined by one of the first artists to work on Magic the Gathering, Tom Wannerstrand. So without further ado, we'll drop you right into the conversation.
Hello there! It's Peter Adkisson. How are you? This is Fireside with Peter Adkisson. My co-host is Beverly Marshall Sailing. We are on Gen Con TV, and my guest today is Tom Wannerstrand. As you may know, if you've watched our show, here we go in search of untold stories from people who are behind the scenes of Magic the Gathering, the early years and the early 90s. And our guest today was there from as close to the beginning as you could possibly get and not be Richard Garfield. So, and Tom Wannerstrand, welcome to our show.
Yay!
Thanks for having me.
Yes.
Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. Wow. So, Magic the Gathering, you did not jump in as an employee. You came in as an artist. But we want to start even earlier than that. Like, Tom, what, before Wizards of the Coast, before Magic, all this stuff, like, what were you doing? And now we're talking about early 90s here, right?
Yeah, early 90s. I was working in the graphics industry.
Yeah.
I used to work in a sign and display industry.
Sign and display.
Yeah, sign and display. So we were doing actual like enameling on steel, like melting glass and putting it down on steel and making signs for parks and zoos and aquariums, working on large art installations.
Wow.
Things like that, working with fine artists.
Right.
On big public commissions.
Right.
Things like that.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you were pretty young.
That's pretty cool.
I mean, you were pretty young when we hired you, so you must, is that?
Yeah, I'm pretty young, I guess. You know, I was in my mid-20s, you know, early 20s, things like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if I seem to recall, you grew up with the Jesper Mirfors. You knew Jesper Mirfors from an early age or something like that.
Yes, I did. And both my family and Jesper's family, Jesper, of course, the original art director,
yes,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, thank you.
Yes, thank
in case
you.
In case you don't know Jesper Mirfors,
yeah.
He was the first Magic director, first art director for Magic the Gathering. He worked on other products for Wizards of the Coast before we did Magic, but he was assigned the awesome task of going out and art directing hundreds of Magic cards. With very little budget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure, and. His family and my family were both Swedish immigrants, and we ended up living a block apart. We lived on the same street.
In Mercer Island?
On Mercer Island, just outside of Seattle.
Right.
People don't know where that is.
Yeah.
Very close.
Yep.
And
out in the middle of a lake.
In the middle of a lake with bridges.
Well, bridges.
This is bridges to get to Mercer Island, yes.
Pontoon boats.
Yeah. it's known as nowadays, as a place where there are a lot of rich people live.
Yeah.
And back in the day, like working class people could actually live on Mercer Island, which was pretty cool. Yeah. So we grew up a block apart. Our families were very close. We did a lot of things, kind of Swedish cultural society kind of things together.
Right.
Almost like a brother to me in some ways.
Right.
And Jesper was responsible for introducing me to role-playing games when Dungeons & Dragons hit the scene in the late 70s.
Right.
We played lots of games together, did a lot of art and drawing together growing up.
Right.
So you were already a gamer before any of the wizard stuff.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I'm a role playing gamer like from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good job.
I figured you'd appreciate that, Peter.
Good job.
Yeah. And you can blame Jesper for that piece too.
Yeah.
So the story is like and then when Jesper had to get all of this art.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioned for the original edition of Magic the Gathering, he tapped into every resource he could find.
Right.
Who do I know who can draw?
Right.
and I was one person on his list of, Tom draws.
Well, I know that a lot of the people he hired as artists for magic were people he went to art school with at Cornish. But did you go to Cornish?
No, I did not go to Cornish.
Did you just learn it, like learn art on your own, basically, or?
Largely. I did go to art school briefly.
Okay.
So I originally studied to do CAD drafting. And, I was doing technical illustration.
Right.
Is what I had originally studied. Mm-hmm. And then I got, this is pretty cool. It's doing exploded engine parts, things like that, you know?
Did you get to explode any engines?
Exploded as in pulled out so you can see the pieces.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Well,
no, that
my
would,
mind went somewhere else.
That's different.
It would have been fun, actually, to explode engines. Actually, I exploded engines later on in my career when I blew up my the engine in my Camaro. But, that's another story. So I was doing that, and then I actually attended in a community college and studied art there for a couple of years.
So you got some training.
And got some training there. Right. And then I had to make
just hanging out with you.
No.
That made you such an excellent artist.
Exactly. But then I had to make some money.
Right.
And so I started going out and taking odd jobs that kind of, could leverage my skills. And I was painting windows for holiday window decorations for businesses, and I was going out doing different types of odd jobs, and then I got this job through one of my professors in school working at this in this sign business. And they said, you can go and assist these artists in making these, really cool sculptures. And I said, sign me up, And did that actually for, 2-3 years. And I really learned a lot there. I learned how to do color mixing and the whole ceramics world, where I'd studied a little bit of that in school, and. It was really cool. And so then, I had some training.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And then, and Jesper had just tapped into me and said, you want to do some of this illustration work?
Right.
And
I
really, at the time I said, I'm really not much of an illustrator, but sure.
Well, you only got three pieces in the original magic
because
you told Jesper you were, I always kind of wondered about that because I think your art's fantastic. In preparing for today's show, I was going back and looking at all of the magic art that you've done, not just the original. And some of those pieces are incredibly striking, and vivid. I remember, for some reason, Arena of the Ancients, it's such a simple piece in a way. There's not a lot of stuff that gets in the way. It's very iconic, right? But it's very memorable. And he's like, that's a striking piece, And then from Alpha, of course, Samite Healer.
Samite Healer.
Royal Assassin.
Royal Assassin.
And Pirate Ship.
That was my favorite. Not my very favorite piece in the whole set, but I had a deck that was only just the pieces that I really liked the art of, and that was one of them.
Oh,
cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
all three of those pieces, by the way, ended up being good in the game, too.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesper threw you a solid there.
Yeah.
I don't know if he did that or not, but he gave you good cards.
Yeah. We had no idea. Any of the illustrators, we had no idea what was good or what wasn't, or what things, I'm, thinking about, Dan Fraser, and he's, illustrating all these moxes.
Yeah.
And it's you have no idea.
Right, sure.
So you didn't know what the cards did
or
anything like that.
No. In the earlier day, how Jesper liked to run things as far as commissioning art is he liked to just give us a brief descriptor.
Yeah.
And in the case of some things, sometimes it was one line, sometimes it was just one word. I think Pirate Ship was just Pirate Ship.
I mean, what else do you need to know? It's a pirate ship.
Exactly.
Right? Go from there.
Well, is it up on dry dock?
Right. I remember he was very much a fan of giving the artists as much latitude as possible. Mm-hmm. He believed, and I believe he was right, that you know, the artist just has more room to put their own creativity into it. And he didn't believe in over art directing. And,
And I think that was some of the strength of the, you know, the early sets was that he did leave it up to the artists. Right. And then the artists themselves really, you know, made all these pieces that when stitched together became Magic Gathering.
Right.
And
it
had
right.
that, you know, the whole mm-hmm. fact that they... that the art was, you know, this wide range of styles,
right?
I think was a pretty cool, cool deal.
Although there were some issues with his wide ranging art directing in that sometimes he would not tell people things like, oh, maybe you shouldn't put wings on this because this is not a flying creature.
right. Well, I think that was all of us as a company even learning.
Right.
Right. I mean, like a Frozen Shade is the creature you're mm-hmm. thinking of, you know, mm-hmm. and it's like, this creature doesn't fly. It certainly looks like it's flying, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that was, we all were like looking like learning how the art needed to match the game mechanics mm-hmm. and to some level, right?
Right. Yeah.
So, but do you remember the first conversation? Do you remember like how Jesper described Magic to you or the project or anything about it?
He was super excited and he I don't know if I can't remember whether he called me up or he came over. I went over to his house, like mm-hmm. like I said yeah, lived a block apart,
right?
Mm-hmm. At that time I think we still lived a block apart.
Mm-hmm.
And he was really super excited. He said Tom, you have to come over and check this out. And I said okay, and he went into this whole description of what this game was and
right.
what he was trying to do from an art direction mm-hmm. standpoint. And I was trying to wrap my head around what this thing was because, of course, the trading card game didn't exist.
Right. Magic was the first trading card game.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh!, all those games were inspired by Magic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, but he described it as, oh, it's like, you know, sports trading cards.
Yeah.
Only it's a game,
mm-hmm.
and there's lots of cards, and we need all these cool illustrations for these mm-hmm. cards, and they're going to be, they're going to be full color, and he's really selling it to me,
right.
And then he went on and on, and he even showed me some sketches and some other things that he had, maybe they'd already received from some other mm-hmm. artists, some of the people that he was working with at from Cornish,
mm-hmm.
and he said, and he kind of launched into, would you like to do some pieces for this?
Yeah, right.
And I think my first thing I said was, how long do I have? Because I could see he was moving very quickly.
Right.
Because
right.
I was a bit concerned that I wouldn't have the time to actually do any illustration work with work. You know?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
The paying
day
gig.
Job. Yeah.
Yeah. The paying day job.
Right.
But with this not being a particularly paying job.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. 50
at
bucks.
At least
cash,
not till later.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, I was also a bit concerned in that I'd done a bunch of illustration work, but not really anything like fully painted, you know, and so I was like, I don't know what the quality is going to be, you know, okay, if you think it's going to be good enough, I'll do some sketches, you know, so that's kind of how it began.
So you did sketches and I was looking at your pieces and it looks like you did watercolor. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an acrylic. Gouache, watercolor, all water-based paints.
And back in the days when art was done with brushes on canvas.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which I don't think most of the art's done that way anymore.
I think nowadays it's mostly digital.
Mostly digital, mm-hmm.
There's probably some people still working conventionally, but a lot of it's gone digital, you know, but back then we didn't have those tools.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Photoshop might have existed, but it was like version 1.0
or something, right.
Yeah,
you know, or whatever, and there were no, some of these other digital painting tools, they just didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back then it's seems like I'm like, wow, it wasn't that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How did you illustrate magic cards without digital tools, Tom?
Gosh. Conventionally. So, you do...
Oh, when you said you worked with brushes, you mean those actual
like
brushes.
Like real brushes,
not the brush icon on the screen.
Yeah.
But
you do a drawing, and in my case, I would draw right on the illustration board, and then I would paint right over the top of it. So I'd show the drawing to the art director, right. You know, the actual thing, and they go, you like that? Yeah, okay, and then I go right on top.
Right.
And there's the finished piece.
And I think the original pieces were about 5x7 in size.
Yes.
Is that about right?
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a reason for that. And that was that's what would fit on a scanner, on a flatbed scanner. Mm-hmm. There was actually a template for the size, like they must be this size.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Because that's what fits on our scanner. And there's no digital cameras.
Well, and it's also a matter of making sure that it was in portrait mode and stood right aspect ratio so that it would
fit
land
in the
right
box
on the card.
Yeah.
As a, but yeah, oh, yeah. Watercolors, oh, yeah. Chris is asking if we've had watercolor paintings.
Yeah,
I'm sure. I thought yours were watercolor, but now it's acrylic.
They're mixed media. Mine are, but there are guys and gals like there's like Rob Alexander.
Yeah, I was about to say, pretty sure Rob's
watercolor.
Are almost all watercolor.
Drew Tucker, it's all watercolor. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Right. You know, watercolor is really difficult to do well for me anyway. Yeah. Very, because you have to commit, you mm-hmm. know, and it's very difficult to do well. Right. And so I'm in awe of people who can do watercolor like mm-hmm. really well, like
Rob
and
Alexander.
Drew and,
yeah.
like, wow. And many others, yeah. you know, but because I kind of suck at it. I can layer stuff on the top, but the actual pure watercolor, you know.
So how do you feel about the pieces that you did? Let's stay focusing on the first three because we're starting there.
I think, you know, they're fairly pedestrian, I feel. You mm-hmm. know, one of the things I tried to do with...
But I don't. I think they're... I mean, I think maybe some of it's nostalgia, but I...
But you have memories attached to them, Peter.
I do have memories attached to them, but I look at them and I think... Even now, I play Magic. I played some Magic recently with old cards. Mm-hmm. So I didn't draw a Royal Assassin, but I had a Samite Healer and a Pirate Ship. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and you see these pieces, and they're nice pieces of art.
You should
feel proud of them.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Especially considering where we all were in our career at the time. And everything, you know, small company.
Yeah. And, you know, no one knew what this thing was going to be. Right? Mm-hmm. No, we didn't know. I didn't, you know, I actually thought, I was like, oh, it seems like a fun thing to, this is a fun thing to actually do some little paintings, you know, and mm-hmm. I wasn't expecting to get anything out of this beyond the little bit.
$50.
$50. Yeah, I was about to say, it's not like you were getting paid enough to spend hours and hours and hours at it, you know?
Yeah, the original Magic was, I remember, we paid $100, but half of that was in equity. It was in the coast.
Yeah.
And $50 in cash.
Yeah.
And so most artists just figured that it was $50 in cash.
It was $50 in cash, and then we got, $50 worth of stock in a company that could be worthless. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you know, okay. And it's kind of an interesting thing.
Right.
Jesper was super confident from the beginning, though. He said, this thing is going to be worth a ton, and you're going to be thankful you did this. And he was like super positive, and he knew it.
Right.
It really amazing.
What was he? She said the best thing since Danish cheese.
Exactly. Danes make some awesome
cheese. I know.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. So, but you know, in the art end, one thing I tried to do with my art mm-hmm. is because I knew this were getting reproduced the size of a postage stamp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I said, you know, you really have to make it stand out. So you really can't mm-hmm. put a ton of detail in there.
Right.
There's some art out there, not just Magic and but other brands, which are, there's a lot going on
right.
in a very small space, and it's very hard to read. And so I tried to make it very simple and focus in on the subject and mm-hmm. make the background kind of go away.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a result, the art tends to be
iconic. It pops.
Yeah, it's kind of, but it can also be static, and it's, you know, and it isn't.
But
you
know, I think I, you know, I.
It's hard to make a ship static.
Yeah.
I mean, I.
You lean it a little.
Yeah, lean it a little bit. Yeah, exactly.
Put a little wind in the sails.
But I do think, you know, I don't, I do think that there was, I think that sometimes more contemporary fantasy art can look really busy, and there's just so much to go on. Your eye mm-hmm. isn't quite sure where to go. You're not quite sure what's important. And mm-hmm. I think that the earlier Magikarp being more iconic was, here's the thing that you're looking at, and everything else, and the mm-hmm. background's often just kind of blurry or kind of dull mm-hmm. in comparison. You know instantly what the piece is. You look at mm-hmm. Samite Healer, and you know this guy. You know, you know what that is. Royal Assassin.
You know what that is.
You know what that is. Right. The guy's lurking, and the pirate mm-hmm. ship are all. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I think they're all excellent pieces.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks. And you know, but you can see it too when you look at like, before this art is like cut down into cards. It's on these press sheets, right?
Mm-hmm.
These,
right.
Big sheets of paper, and seeing all the cards laid out on a press sheet, mm-hmm. you can see that like the older art, you mm-hmm. know, how iconic it is. It's really right. standing out, all those pieces, versus like a modern press sheet where it's, mm-hmm. It's a bit more busy.
Right.
You know?
Right. So
go ahead.
Go ahead.
Did Jesper give you any, a lot of feedback on stuff, or did he just kind of say, woohoo, that's fine with me, you know?
There was a lot of woohoo. There's a lot of woohoo. That's cool. I think he's very open. Now, he gave some feedback. He told me one time, I did a piece this years later, and I did a piece for a set. It was like a portal or something like mm-hmm, that, mm-hmm. or starter magic. And mm-hmm. and he goes, I have to tell you, Tom, that's pretty weak. and I'm like, thanks a lot, dude.
Very specific.
Yeah. So that I got feedback like that. I'm like, okay, let's like crawl back and rework a couple things.
Try to make a handkerchief. I can just
director happy. Yeah. So he wasn't afraid to give some harsh feedback, but that was kind of how he would do it. Mm-hmm. And usually he's like, that looks cool, perfect, go.
Right.
You know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Do you want another piece, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. And
So you've gone on from there, and you've done a lot of art pieces over the years. I mean, I was kind of surprised when I went up and looked.
I know, I went and I counted them a couple years ago or something too, and I was surprised as well. So I went
about how many I didn't actually
count. It's like over 60.
Yeah, I was thinking 50. So yeah.
Yeah, it's like 60 some odd.
Over 6 pieces of art. Now, mm-hmm. have you done one? What's the most recent? I mean, do you still do them once in a while, or has it been?
I still draw for myself.
Years? I mean, for
now, but as far as published stuff for Magic, I haven't done any since what's the set? Time Spiral.
Is that?
Mm-hmm. And when that was 2004 mm-hmm. or 5 somewhere mm-hmm. in there or something. You know, so really I was doing
10,
art
15
for
years.
Yeah, I was doing art for about a 10-year span there,
right?
And mm-hmm. then over a variety of different art directors, over the years,
right?
Mm-hmm. That have worked on the brand.
Mm-hmm. So which other art directors, real quick?
So we had Jesper first, then Sandra Everingen.
Sandra Everingen, yes.
Was art director for a while. Yeah. There's Jeremy Cranford.
Yep.
Jeremy mm-hmm. There was Sue Ann Harkey.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
There was
another
Jeremy Jarvis later also, and some other guys. Yeah. So there's a number of different mm-hmm. art directors, but there's been many of them over the years. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we should get into you actually going and working at Wizards of the Coast full time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at what point did you get hired? Pretty early.
My first exposure after doing artwork was in your basement.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Sorting artwork with Jesper. Mm-hmm. And I remember I remember putting them up on a whiteboard.
Mm-hmm. Right.
on your couch.
Right.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yep.
Back in the basement days.
In the basement
literally
days.
Literally was in the basement of my house.
I know exactly which couch you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Jesper had asked for some help to kind of sort through the art of which ones do we have, which ones do we not, what are we missing, mm-hmm. et cetera. And so that was my first really exposure where I was like, whoa, this is really a thing. Mm-hmm. Beyond
and
me doing
was
some...
that alpha or is that later?
That's alpha.
That was alpha, right?
It was alpha art.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So sorting art in the basement, mm-hmm. and I think I came over once or twice or something at that time.
Right.
And then some time went by.
And so, by the way, just so for those listening. So the Sorting of the Art in the Basement. So that would have been before Magic was published originally. Would have been early in 1993. That would have been, February, March, April, 1993, because Magic came out in July, August. So we would have had to have all the art done, finished by May, June. And not much earlier than that. All right, the first pieces.
Yeah, we pushed that one.
The first pieces of Magic art I saw that were completed, I remember, was at Jesper's family Christmas party.
Right.
They had
that
a,
was a yes, thing.
That was, and I had no idea I was going to see it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't know if you were there. And thinking about it, it was surprising if you weren't there.
I think I was probably there.
You probably passed out drunk somewhere.
too much glug.
Glug. Oh, I love glug.
You like glug?
Yeah, I love
Swedish
glug.
Mulled wine. Yeah. Oh, man.
So I went over to his house, and they invited me to this party, and Jesper was like, hey, come downstairs for a second. And like, okay, okay. So we went downstairs, and he had, I think it was 12 pieces, mostly Anson Maddox, I think, Mark Tadine pieces, who were, you know, both did a lot of pieces for original Alpha.
Because they could crank them out.
Yeah, they could crank them out. They were a lot faster, evidently, than
they're a lot faster than me.
Well, they probably, maybe they didn't have a day job distracting them.
That's entirely possible.
Right, who knows? So, yeah, okay, so you helped him sort Magic art.
Yeah, Magic art in the basement, you know, basement days. And so, early in 93. Then some time went by. You know, turned in my pieces, and some time went by, and then Jesper said, "Oh yeah, we've done a first printing, and you know, we're gonna the product's gonna come out here pretty soon." And I think sometime before the launch, we all gathered again at his house, and I remember he handed out Alpha decks to everyone in the room.
Wow!
And we sat around, and I was like, "Oh yeah, we actually get to see the product, right?"
Right.
And busted them open.
Everybody, you remember, like, was that other artists? Probably Anson and Mark. And
there was
Sandra
other artists there. There was other. I want to say that maybe there was some. Maybe like, I don't know if you were there. Lisa was there.
Possibly. Yeah. I don't remember it, but boy, there's a lot I don't remember now.
You know, talk about, you know, just handing out alpha decks like candy.
So what was that like seeing the cards?
Pretty amazing. Yeah. And the first thing is that, and you know, and then those were, they were randomized, right?
Yes.
Those decks. Yep. And so I was opening decks, trying to find my cards.
Trying to find your cards.
And two of them are rare. Right. So I didn't.
Pirate
I don't,
Simpson Royals.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I don't think I found any of my cards. I think I found the Samite Healer because it's a common card.
Right.
And I was like, oh, where are my cards at? And they go, oh, there's one. Okay. You know. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
We sat there and you know,
are you sure? Well, it was that sorting job, you know?
And I don't even know, you know, Richard may have even been there because I remember asking, you know, and seeing the cards and everything else, I was like, oh, okay, so you got these random decks, and I had the gist of how this thing plays, right?
Right.
And I was like, but what's to stop the person from just going and buying the best deck, right? And Richard said, he goes, this thing called ante. Because you have to ante up all of your cards. That's what, you know, a card every time you play, and you might lose these great cards that you have collected or whatever.
There was this narrow window in the history of Magic the Gathering where people played for ante. Ante was not a very popular rule, and it got dropped. I think most Magic players don't even know it existed. So maybe I should explain. In the very earliest release of Magic the Gathering, when you play, let's see, Beverly and I are playing a game, we would shuffle our decks, you know, cut, and then you would take from each deck, you'd flip over the top card, and that was the ante. And whoever won that game got to keep, like permanently keep, the two cards that got antied up.
It didn't matter if you're putting up a common card or the other guy's putting up a rare card. That's just the luck of the draw.
And there was a dynamic where people who were really good at Magic would build decks out of common cards and go beat people who had more expensive. It was exactly like Richard said, you know, but of course, when the really good people also had really good cards, then those decks were kind of unbeatable eventually. Right. So eventually we had to put together rules for how to avoid this problem, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And but exciting thing, right? You know, to get these decks of cards, this thing is actually a real thing.
Right.
You know, really, really amazing. And it was kind of cool to hear it from Richard just say, yeah, this is, Yeah, look at this creation I did. Yeah,
it's got to be especially fun for the artist because your name is actually on the card. I mean, nobody else's name is on the card.
I know, I'm published.
Everybody knows this is your one.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. That's part fun part of this show is walking back memory lane with and remembering and asking people that come on to our show, asking you like, what was it when you first saw the cards?
These first memories, right? You know, I can just vividly see it, you know, opening the decks, you know, really amazing.
Yeah.
My wife also, her Andrea, her claim to fame, we weren't married at the time, but her claim to fame was Richard taught her how to play Magic, which is true. And I think it may have been at this particular event sat down and actually, this is how it works, and taught her. And yeah, I thought that was pretty cool.
Wow.
She's like, oh, yeah, you know, Richard taught me. Mm-hmm.
So you did some other work, I think, for Wizards outside of illustration. I think you worked on the Duelist magazine before.
And so... so then, you know, this thing launched, blew up, was becoming, started to do additional pieces of artwork for other sets. Mm-hmm. I think Arabian Nights was the next thing. I did one whole card for that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Do you remember which card it was?
Merchant Ship.
Oh,
because the ships.
Because because I became known as Ship Guy.
Ship guy.
Like Jesper liked the pirate ship, and so I became ship guy. Mm-hmm.
It's good to have an itch.
I know
it is,
and so I've done quite a few.
I know. I was looking at a merchant ship.
Yeah,
yeah.
Ghost ship, skeleton ship,
ship shape. No,
etc. etc. There are a number of ships there.
Go down with the ship.
Yeah. Yes. But then there was the first Duelist magazine was being put together by Jesper and I think Catherine in those
Catherine
days.
Catherine Haynes.
Right. Mm-hmm. And they were working in Jesper's basement. There were a lot of basements in early Magic.
Yes.
Early history of Wizards of the Coast.
Right.
Not so much seeing the sun or anything.
It's all castles and towers.
Exactly. Bottom end, the dungeon.
Right.
And they were working on Duelist magazine, so I helped them out there. And that was my first, you know, I had in my exposure to this whole display industry, I had had some exposure there to pre-press.
Right.
In working on Macs and doing typesetting and things like that, I actually had some chops there. And that was like the dawn of desktop publishing. It was a new thing.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so Jesper said, hey, you've got some chops there. we could use some help.
Right.
So I worked with Catherine and Jesper in his basement putting together the first Duelist magazine. Mm-hmm.
So you're doing, were you helping them like do graphic design and layout for it? Right.
Design and layout.
Design and layout.
Yep.
Well, and that was a pretty heavily laid out magazine.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I was looking, I have a copy of it because it's the only one I ever actually had a piece in.
Right.
It's the purple one, right?
Exactly.
With the you know, the Arabian Nights focus, because that was the launch that it was supporting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this would be the end of 93.
We got on that pretty early.
Yeah.
And Jesper and Catherine, I think, really deserve the lion's share of the credit for, you know, saying we they had the passion for it, you know, like in many organizations, you know, it's when somebody gets real passionate about something, that can, you know, go a long way towards it getting done, right? And so, they wanted to do this magazine. And boy, I remember Catherine saying about Kilder, but...
Well, and it wasn't just like, you know, you get a regular magazine, it's like, here's some text on a white background, and, you know, maybe there's some borders or something. There were fancy backgrounds and fancy fonts and fancy borders and fancy...
Jesper wanted every page to look like a work of art.
And, we were painting that thing with ink. You know, it was like, as they say in the biz, heavy coverage.
Mm-hmm. Heavy coverage.
Heavy coverage. Oh, yeah. Everything was, you know, the hand-painted backgrounds, other things, you know, this magazine. Yeah, it was really amazing. Mm-hmm.
All right, so we're halfway through our time and you haven't got hired yet. So let's
let's get moving. let's get moving along. So so then you know, later on, so I'd done some work with Jesper and so on. He had said another I think we're in early 1994.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, would you consider going and working for Wizards of the Coast? This thing's blowing up. We're hiring.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, if you can, I thought about it for a while, for a couple seconds. And I thought this actually looks like a cool gig.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I said, if you can match what I'm making today, I'll take you up on that.
Mm-hmm.
And he came back. I guess he went and talked to you, perhaps.
Yeah.
I don't know. He came back like one day later and said, we'll match your salary. And I think it was some ridiculously low amount of money.
Right.
I'm like, is that all they're going to pay me? No. And I considered
it. Well,
you
got a raise since then, right?
Oh, yeah. There's been one since then.
Yeah.
So
what were you hired to do? What was your first job at Wizards of the Coast?
So what he was looking for was production management. Mm-hmm. And I had some experience in doing production management, and that's where what they wanted.
And is production management?
So,
or what did it turn out to be?
what did that
job end up being at Wizards of the Coast?
Yeah, it's working with supply partners to physically produce the products. There's a lot of coordination. I'd mentioned that I'd done some pre-press work.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of coordination in pre-press, electronic file handoff, vetting of materials, some packaging design and things. There wasn't much of that in the early days because it was like a tuck box
or booster
wrap.
But
mostly preparation of files for handing off for production.
Right.
And working with the vendors to ensure that it gets properly produced. That's production management in kind of a nutshell.
So in the case of Wizards of the Coast, in the early to mid-1994-ish, for Magic the Gathering, that the vendors would have been Carta Mundi.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So Carta Mundi, which was our first printer of Magic cards and packaging.
Yep.
They at least then, I'm not sure about these days, but they were a turnkey sort of supplier for us in the sense that they either did themselves or hired out from them, you know, sort of, you know, invisible to us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Buy the paper, get the packaging all done.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would send to us these big sheets of clear guidelines, if you will.
A die line.
Yeah,
you
got
it.
I remember the word.
Yeah.
And we would scan, but it wasn't digital yet. We would have to create a digital graphic design file based on what this. And if you imagine, if you took a deck box that Magic decks come in, and if you took it apart and laid it out flat, that's what the die line was.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And so you have to kind of understand where all the pieces would end up when it was all folded together.
Which side should be right side up?
And... Yeah, which side should be right side up?
Which panel is facing forward?
Yeah.
Right.
You know, where does the barcode go? All these things where if you don't...
Or just leave it off.
Yeah, or just leave
it off. In the case of the alpha starter deck box, I don't think there was a barcode, right?
Yeah.
So you would work with the graphic designers, or maybe you did some of the graphic design yourself, to create those files.
Yes.
And then send them to an agency to create films, right?
Send
them to like CMYK or someplace like this, right?
Correct.
Who would take that digital file, turn it into films, and send it to Carta Mundi, and just kind of managing that piece of
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And in those days, everything was, we call it, you know, analog versus digital.
Right,
everything's digital process now.
Right.
But back then it was analog film. So we would digitally lay out these cards.
Right.
Which was, again, cutting edge of digital pre-press, you know, at the time.
Right.
I remember the original Magic cards were typeset on like a Commodore.
Yeah,
computer
Dave Howell's,
by Dave Howell.
Yeah. He's Amiga.
Yeah,
Amiga.
Amiga. That's right, an Amiga.
Yes.
Not a mainstay in pre-press, even at the time. It was kind of whatever worked.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
And then they would be, you know, finished little files, and we would lay them out in these die line grids and send them off and actually get film made and made locally.
Right.
And I know you guys have been talking to Jefferson in the past year, and that's kind of the work that he did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'd make film and then we would ship it
to Cardamundi,
to Belgium.
To Belgium. Now, I seem to recall, I will find out if this is a true story or not. Mm-hmm. Like, I seem in the magic lore, there is a story that one time our deadline was so tight that you actually got on a plane with a bunch of films and flew them to Belgium.
Yeah, in my hand, in my hand luggage.
In your hand luggage.
Well, you're not going to check that.
No. It's a big flat because you can't roll this stuff either, or at least you shouldn't.
Right.
And I had this big, like, portfolio bag.
Right.
You know, like a, like an artist's portfolio thing. You know, you'd have your big oil painting in or something like that. And, you know, hand-carried film just, over to Belgium.
To in get order our deadline. To meet the deadline. They needed it the next day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay, so it's a true story. I wonder what set that was. It was probably, who knows.
It was.
Yeah, Antiquities, Legends, something like that.
Somewhere in there.
Somewhere there.
Early somewhere days.
Early days.
Yeah, but you know, you do what you have to do, you know, to get the work done, and that at the end of the day, that was my responsibility. So, all right, just hop on a plane, get a ticket, and off you go, right?
So, you've been doing this for a long time now, though. I mean, I don't want to skip the next 20 some years.
No, Well, I've been in the hobby game industry now. Yeah, since then, 25 years.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So this this turned out to be your career.
I did. And, you know, I was saying that to somebody the other day. I was saying, you know, it turns out you can make a career out of this business. You know?
Right, right.
And who knew?
Yeah.
Well, we kind of hoped, but.
Kind of
hoped. No, exactly. And, you know, my stepsister, she had told me years ago when I was playing Dungeons and Dragons, you know, she's like, she's like, Tommy, because she calls me Tommy. She's one of the few people who can call me Tommy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But she said, and she said, Tommy, what do you got to do something with your life. What are you going to do with Dungeons and Dragons? You're never going to do anything in your life playing that game.
I assume you've not let her forget that.
Oh, no, I did not. I did absolutely not,
So, so you're working at Wizards now?
I'm working at Wizards now. I did leave Wizards for a while. I left for 5 years, and I worked for a variety of different people on the production side. But I stayed in the hobby
game
business, tabletop hobby game business.
Right.
Working for manufacturers and other publishers.
Right. When you say manufacturers, are you talking about like printers?
Yeah, yeah, like the Cardamundis of the world and other folks like that.
Right.
Yeah. I worked for a company out of just outside of London called Games and Print Services. Worked there for a while. I contracted and worked for Cranium.
Right.
The Cranium company for a while, who before they were gobbled up by Hasbro.
Right.
Happens to the best of us.
Yeah, you know, all the good companies, right? Right. Yeah, but it kind of stayed in that in this industry, you know, from the beginning. And then they lured me back to Wizards again.
Right.
Doing largely the same kinds of things. You know, I've been kind of on the production end my entire career.
Right.
And it's become kind of a specialized thing. Turns out there aren't too many people out in the world who have like an expertise in like card collation.
Right.
You know, just complex card sorting.
Now, card collation
equipment
sorting.
And so on. Yeah.
And I think what you're talking about here is that, you know, Magic cards, when you buy a booster pack of Magic cards or a deck of Magic cards, the cards are on a surface level appear to be somewhat random in what cards are in which booster. But they're not truly random. There's, you know, in achieving true randomness is very difficult, it turns out, right? There is some sort of... Now, I remember Cardamundi had these sorting machines that would sort the cards and change how cards were routed out, and then it would go into piles based on common cards, uncommon cards, and rare cards, and to build a booster pack, you'd grab cards from each of these three piles. Mm-hmm. Is that still how it's done?
Basically.
You know,
over the years, the equipment's changed, and... the capabilities have expanded and so on, but you know, it's more or less how it's still done.
Yeah.
You know, you got to print these things and then you've got to get them randomly collated and then loaded into packaged. it turns out you don't want it truly random, perfectly random, because then bad things happen.
Right.
Yeah, you want to be able to have the right land to cast some of the spells that you have. Otherwise, that's
you
just
want
bad.
Some predictability within your randomness.
Yeah. Right.
And that's the secret sauce to the whole thing, right?
Mm-hmm. I have one of my experiences and stories about early magic before we discovered Card of Monday, and we were like, how do we randomize these cards? Mm-hmm. We knew it was possible that sports cards were doing it, but we didn't want to go to any of the companies making sports card collectible cards because we didn't want them to steal our idea.
Yeah.
And I remember, so we're like, well, how do we get these cards randomized? And Kim McLaughlin, I remember him drawing on a napkin, and gosh, I wish we still had it. He designed this, this conveyor belt idea where the magic cards would come off of this conveyor belt and then go into one of these blowers, like an Elato machine, right?
Like a big blower.
So these cards would go, and then you just reach in and grab
in and
cards and stuck them in packs, right? Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's like, thank goodness we found Card of Monday.
Oh man. Well, I think you did well to find a good partner. We still work with them today.
They're actually,
as far as Wizards of the Coast goes, one of the longest partners.
Yeah.
25 years, that, right. I mean, if not the longest.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really amazing.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. I mean, it was many years before we worked with anybody else other than Card of Monday for print buying. But great. I always have a fond place in my heart for Luke Mertens, who was the guy there. Yeah. Who introduced us. We had no idea what we were doing at all. I mean, no idea. Before we didn't have you before. Like before you came on board, I remember. Mark Reinhagen at White Wolf is the one who introduced me to Luke Mertens at
Gen
Con.
I did not know
that.
Was
Gen Con in 1992. Mm. A year into developing Magic, we were getting more and more sort of desperate, if you will, trying to figure out how are we going to manufacture these things. Mm-hmm. And it got to a point where I started asking people in the industry. I didn't go to the sports card people because I was really scared they would steal it. But I started talking to friends that I had made in tabletop gaming. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And at Gen Con in 1992, Mark Reinhagen comes up to me and says, I found your guy. I'm like, what? Yeah. I found the guy who can print what you need. And he takes him over and went over to the White Wolf booth, and I met Luke Mertens. And he took me to lunch, and I explained what I made him play Magic. I had prototype cards. I made him play. So he says, and Luke's like, I don't play games.
Yeah,
I make them, but I don't play them. He says, Luke, you got to play game, otherwise you're not going to understand.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so he did.
So he played.
He played.
Yeah.
I made him play Magic with me.
That's pretty cool.
And yeah, they said, oh yeah, we could do all that. He was so we can do that. Yeah, yeah, we can do. I was explaining about the sorting and all this stuff like that. So
he's a bit of a legend in Card of Monday circles as the guy who brought collectibles into their business.
Yeah, on a hunch. Right.
Like, I'm sure he was wondering, do these guys have any money?
We didn't.
It was a good thing to wonder.
he did require that we didn't get credit with Card of Monday at the beginning.
Small hobby companies are not exactly like a hotbed of investor cash.
Right. Exactly.
At least they weren't back then.
But we were talking about packaging earlier, right? I remember just as a statement, this is embarrassing in terms of how naive we were. But I remember we were all entirely 100% focused in the beginning on just making cards.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I remember we had signed up Luke and he said, okay, we're going to do that. And then, I reached out to him about 4 months later around November, November, December. I said, okay, we want to, remember me? We talked to Gen Con.
I have your card.
Yes. I was dialing internationally. Yeah. This card. And, we talked about it, and he says, well, what are you going to do for packaging? And I'm like, packaging? Yeah, good.
We have to make that!
Good question. and just immediately, I have no idea how to make packaging. Like, we don't know how we're going to package this, right?
Yeah.
And he talked me through this idea of, Well, we knew we wanted decks, and we knew we wanted booster packs, and that the deck would have the rules, this little rules booklet, and with the other cards, because the rules are going to be simple. Most of the rules would just be on the cards. Anyway.
So the little rule book that was in the decks, right? The little.
The little rule book.
The tiny
print.
Just about killed my eyes trying to proofread.
Yes. Right. I'm not surprised. So he said, if you have a point of purchase display, and I didn't know what a point of purchase display was, right? He says, you know, it's like a box that you put these decks in or these boosters in. And I said, well, that sounds interesting. And so he sent me, pictures of what they would look like and these die lines. And you know, we had no idea, right? And so it made sense once he explained it, of course. And it was like, well, yeah, obviously we have to have this. We got to do this.
And so, right. And
so Jesper went off and worked with you, apparently, on doing the graphic design of those boxes. Don't get the Darren headlights look there. Yeah, I didn't mean to scare you.
No, I think the, you know, the original ones I wasn't too involved in, but certainly subsequent ones. But the, you know, it's really, Card Money kind of borrowed from the whole trading card industry,
the
sports trading cards. But really, they set the standard for what a trading card game ended up being.
Which
is very interesting to me in that it's going to be like sports trading cards. They're going to be in, we call it flow wrap. That's the booster wrap is the technical term.
But flow wrap. It's funny because I think it was Luke Mertens. It might have been somebody else. Came to me years later, because at Wizards, we went and patented certain aspects of a collectible card game, trading card game, the tapping and stuff like that. And somebody said, Peter, you really should have done this patent of packaging of how a trading card game gets packaged. And it's like, oh, okay. Well, hindsight.
Absolutely. And you know, there's other kind of cool things in the, in that, like Cardamundi, the reason that Magic cards are 63 by 88 millimeters is that's a European poker size. It's not an American poker size, it's a European poker size. Right. But it became a standard in the industry, even if you were, for a lot of companies, even if they were making cards elsewhere. Outside of Europe.
Right. Because the card sleeves came shortly after the card. Magic came out. All of a sudden you got these collectible cards. Immediately people started taking these cards and putting them in like Ultra Pro type binders and stuff like that.
So that's a Euro standard.
Yeah.
Some other things like, Magic cards are on playing card paper, playing card board. And that's a special kind of paper.
Well, I remember talking when I was explaining the idea for Magic to Luke. I was like, this is really important. These are packaged, sorted like baseball cards, but they're going to play like, poker cards. Like, and I want casino quality poker cards on these things. And that, fortunately, lucky enough that we talked to the right guy, the right company, and they gave us,
quality stuff.
Playing cards.
Well, yeah,
Magic cards are quality playing cards.
Yeah, so you went to a playing card company, right, to get that, and that's that's different than trading cards.
Right,
trading cards aren't on that that paper.
Yeah, they're not.
Well, they're not meant to be shuffled. They're just meant handled a lot.
But I'm thankful that we knew that at the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That we were, and Richard, I think I'm sure contributed to this discussion that that these had to be playing cards.
So there's all kinds of little things like that kind of set the standard for what the Magic and other games of its ilk ended up being, which is kind of cool if you look at the history there,
Do we have any questions, Kristen, from the audience? Oh, we got them.
So I have one more question. Which is, going forward after doing some of this, and I know you're still doing it too, but are you going to have more fond memories of doing the art or of doing the production management?
I think I'm reminded of the art all the time because Magic's more popular than ever right now.
Yeah.
And now there are younger generations of Magic fans that that send cards to me get signed or do altars do things or invitations to go do signing events or those types of things. Mm-hmm. And so I'm reminded that so like, you know, the whole art piece is pretty cool, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and I don't think anybody's going to let me forget it.
Yeah.
On that end. But I am very proud of the artwork that I've done, and also of all the other work that I've done, mm-hmm. and kind of the day job over the years. You know, it's pretty cool. It's an interesting career, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Some people might say, no, not really. Well,
it's hard. It's hard work. I mean, what mm-hmm. you do, it's understanding all the requirements for the paper, for the sorting, for inks.
Learning on the fly, and a lot of this.
Recyclable packaging.
But learning it in time and building upon that knowledge, mm-hmm. and turning it into a career over years.
Well, as
you are an expertise in this now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, after a while you pick up all these things and they become this body of knowledge, right? Mm-hmm. Like you had mentioned earlier, we were pretty naive in the early days.
We were really naive.
and we didn't know anything, you know, and we were just figuring it out.
We didn't know that we couldn't do it.
Exactly. Right. This is possible. And, you know, but we managed, I think, you know, you started that and some of the rest of us carried on of aligning mm-hmm. ourselves with the right mm-hmm. people to guide it along and get it where it needed to go,
so
right?
We're almost out of time. I don't know if you got one more story that you could dredge up from the interview.
Oh, man.
To put you on the spot. Oh, what?
Yeah, wait, we have a question.
You have a question? Yeah. Yes,
yeah,
please.
Yeah,
for Tom. That's okay, Barbara. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Poll was last week.
What is your favorite piece of art that you've done and of someone else's in terms of magic?
So she's asking what your favorite piece of art is that you've done and or other pieces of art.
My favorite piece of art that I've done is Blood Moon.
Oh, yes.
Which is also
Legends?
The Dark?
The Dark.
Yeah.
The Dark. Right.
Because it's the closest to kind of my painting style that I do for me. Mm-hmm. You know?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's why.
Right.
You know, and so I like that piece. It also happens to be a popular piece.
Right.
As well, due to gameplay,
right.
You know, mm-hmm.
right.
usually mm-hmm. how it rolls,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So that's my favorite personal piece. And then another artist, oh boy. I'd say, I had mentioned him earlier, you know, I love, there's so many great artists.
Yeah.
The current ones.
It's not really a fair question,
I know.
It's
amazing, all these amazing artists out there. But I really like, I had mentioned him earlier, Rob Alexander.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Rob Alexander, his Underground Sea,
mm-hmm.
you know, that piece.
That is,
I tried to
mm-hmm.
buy it, and mm-hmm. Jesper kept it, and I tried to buy that piece because I love it so much. And then mm-hmm. I learned later that he sold it to some, you know.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, dude.
That piece is such a beautiful piece, and mm-hmm. I remember it so well as being, like, we saw lots of really cool art that came
mm-hmm.
in.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that as, then that piece came in, like, oh, this is beautiful art.
Right.
As mm-hmm. opposed to cool or edgy or interesting. It mm-hmm. was just absolutely a gorgeous piece. And of course, we did many other gorgeous pieces after that.
But that was the kind of piece that you could put up in your house with, you know, regular art.
Right.
That isn't, you know, from games, and people would not
yes.
think, oh, that's out of place.
Wait a minute, there's no
regular art.
Regular art. There's no, those aren't the usual demons hanging on your wall.
Right. No, we all know what you mean.
Yeah. It is beautiful, and he paints. Rob could probably paint a pretty good demon too. But
yeah,
he paints some amazing landscapes.
Oh yeah, his landscapes are incredible.
And these fantasy landscapes are pretty cool. Yeah, yeah. So that.
All right. Well, I think we're getting close to our time limit for today. Thank you, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good to have you.
Thanks for having me, Peter.
Absolutely.
Beverly.
Mm-hmm. And thank you all for joining us today on Gen Con TV, Fireside with Peter Adkisson. Thanks to my co-host, Beverly Marshall Sailing, and to our guest, Tom Waterstrand.
I hope you enjoyed today's classic episode of Fireside with Peter Adkisson. If you want to catch the show live, be sure to tune in every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific on twitch.tv/GenConTV. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to stay up to date on all the Fireside Podcast happenings. We will be back every Monday with classic episodes of Fireside covering the history of Magic the Gathering, and every Friday with new episodes of Fireside Dungeons & Dragons. Again, I've been Marcus from Gen Con TV. Thank you for listening, and we will see you soon.